From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Lower Haven.
Visitation Valley.
Downtown San Francisco.
Oh, Ingleside SF.
Coming up, we take you to the Bayview. First stop, a San Francisco icon, the Bayview Opera House.
The landmark program started in late 1967. And this is a landmark number 8 in San Francisco. We're before Legion of Honor, before City Hall.
Then we meet a man from the Bayview who's helping other men be the best fathers they can be.
If I understand what I really value in my life, then and that means I value the future of any child that I bring into the world.
And this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound takes us to a spot that doesn't sound quite like it used to.
Cows would be there, and it would be so creepy because you could hear them just going,
The view from the Bayview, today on Cross Currents. This year marks the 125th birthday of a San Francisco historic landmark. Nope, not City Hall, not the Golden Gate. Bayview Opera House, San Francisco's oldest theater. It was built in 1888 by the Freemasons and over the decades expanded and evolved with the neighborhood. It went from being a performance space for vaudeville, opera, and theater to include visual arts, education, social activism, and community building. Today, it's the neighborhood's vibrant cultural hub. The Opera House closed recently for some major fix-ups. Last week, Mayor Ed Lee and the San Francisco Arts Commission broke ground on the building's renovation.
We're all coming together to understand treasures like this and how we can turn historic sites into meaningful, active sites along 3rd Street.
I went by the Opera House before it closed and spoke with its executive director, Barbara Ockel, about the Opera House then and now.
Bayview was just kind of a, you know, collection of some ramshackle little huts. There was cows grazing, there were slaughterhouses. And it was kind of a, you know, upcoming business community, but it wasn't really connected to the city. And so the Masons decided what this community lacks is culture and entertainment. So they built the Bayview Opera House for that purpose. And they started having little shows and you know, large celebrations. And when acts came up from Southern California to perform downtown at the real opera houses, they stopped here first, and that was kind of their warm-up. Minstrel shows, vaudeville, you know, that kind of thing. And then as it got closer to the 30s, that wasn't happening so much anymore, and the building was used for various purposes. It was a pool hall for a while, a storage area, just miscellaneous things. And then in the 60s, it was sold by the Masons to a private owner. And that's where Ruth Williams came in, who is the person that the building is now named after. There was a danger that the building was going to be demolished because people were saying, well, it's just this old building, let's just take it down, let's put something else here. And she went to war, and she was able to connect with some people downtown and got the building landmarked in 1968. And it's actually, the landmark program started in late 1967. And this is a landmark number 8 in San Francisco. We're before Legion of Honor, before City Hall, you know, before all kinds of buildings that are way more famous. So we have this wonderful 3,000 square foot performance space where people can sit. And you see below us the Douglas fir floor that we uncovered under many layers of very ugly material. And you see on the stage... The stage is a proscenium stage, and it has a proscenium arch, and it's beautifully painted in the original style that was painted when it was first built.
The theater is an art gallery.
We have changing shows all the time, and people do come in here during events, and they see the art that they would normally maybe not see because they're not in the habit of going to art galleries, but because they're coming here to see a show, participate in a meeting, they're exposed to the art, and people always walk around and look at the art when they come. This quilt here was made by one of our teaching artists, William Rhodes, with students from Charles Drew Elementary School, and it was a Black History Month project. You know, their school is named for Charles Drew, and so the artists went in and investigated the history of Dr. Charles Drew, And then each child prepared a square for this quilt that then the artist assembled into a big quilt. So that's
so part, colorful.
Yes, it is. And it's part of our Dare to Dream Arts program, where we send professional artists as teachers into schools and work with the children. And children also come to the Bayview Opera House for these activities, but now, you know, if we're going to be closed, that won't be able to happen. So the artists go to the schools and work on projects with the kids, and then oftentimes they bring the stuff back here. And so then the parents come in to admire the art that the kids created. And so it connects the parents and the kids back to the Bayview Opera House. So our building is now closed for renovations, and it's going to be closed for about a year. And the renovations that are going to be taking place are going to be transforming. And so we're going to get a new outdoor stage and a large area around the stage where people can sit and enjoy concerts, performances.
This building is now shut off, but it's closed to the public. But you're not stopping Third on Third, which is tonight. So why don't we give our listeners a sneak peek into what they can expect if they head to Third on Third tonight?
Yes, Third on Third is an event that we're going to always be doing as long as people want us to do it. We're doing it for the community. And tonight we're going to have roller skating. Well, rollerblading, actually, I have to say. It's rollerblading these days. And it's going to cost $1 to rollerblade. It's going to include the shoes. And then we're going to have as special guests the African-American Shakespeare Company. And they're going to have members of their cast as Cinderella and Prince Charming from their play Cinderella that they perform every holiday season. We're just about ready to have the kids from Charles Drew School come over. And they're taking photography and music today.
What role do you feel the Opera House has in changing the perception of Bayview as a place of poverty, a place of low-income residents? What power does this place have, do you think, in changing those perceptions, which are widely held?
What we're doing is just saying, well, we're not denying that there is poverty, because there is, and it's something that needs to be addressed. But what we're trying to say is that you don't have to be afraid to come to Bayview. It is not dangerous to be in Bayview. And people in Bayview are just regular people that you want to meet, that have fun, that enjoy a good concert, that enjoy a good meal at a restaurant. And so we're trying to activate the street around the Bayview Opera House. And that's what we're doing with our Third on Third events, as well as other events that we've done over the years. But we're just putting stuff on the street in the different restaurants, both new restaurants, new businesses, old businesses. We don't make any distinction. Whoever is around the Bayview Opera House can participate in this event, and many do now. And so we just put activity in the street so that people don't have to be afraid. Like, you don't want to be the only person walking around on an empty street that feels maybe kind of bad. But if there's hundreds of people around you and there's music playing on the corner, then it feels comfortable. So that's how we are, you know, counteracting that.
What do you think the Bayview Opera House has done for Bayview?
I think the Bayview Opera House, more than anything, gives Bayview an identity. And it's something that people say, yes, that's us. The Bayview Opera House is us. I went there as a child. I had really great experiences there. It's sort of the hub. It's something that combines that, you know, connects everybody in the community, because they have good experiences at the Bayview Opera House.
That's Barbara Ockel, Executive Director of the Bayview Opera House. The monthly street fest Third on Third is happening tonight until 8 p.m. on Third Street. Better head on over there. But after Cross Currents, of course. And if you have any memories of the Opera House, we'd love to hear them. Leave a message at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And we may get your story on the air. Thank you. Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. As we heard, the Opera House has played a vital role in changing perceptions about Bayview Hunters Point as a violent, crime-ridden neighborhood. Bayview residents are doing that, too. About 10 years ago, on a Thursday night, James Martin had just arrived home when the deafening sound of gunshots rang out. He looked out the window and saw a young man laying on the ground. Troubled by the senseless loss of another life in the neighborhood, he decided he had to do something. That following Sunday, he put on a suit, grabbed his portable karaoke machine, went to the sidewalk memorial erected for the young man, and he began singing.
I began singing, "Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking. Time for thinking ahead."
He did this to draw attention to the violence plaguing the neighborhood. Today, Martin is still standing up for San Francisco's Bayview neighborhood. Recently, he called on local fathers to walk their children to school, then marched to the Bayview Opera House for a rally.
We're here in commitment to our children, and we're here in commitment to our community. You all make some noise about that.
Martin's main focus now is helping men stay involved in their children's lives and their community. Reporter Laura Flynn followed Martin around for a few days to find out how he does this.
James Martin is originally from Detroit, but his family arrived in Bayview in 1959. His father was a bus driver and moved the family out west as the Detroit transit system was shrinking and San Francisco's growing.
He said, "Well, you guys, when you come out here, we're going to live on a big house on a hill overlooking the ocean." And I said, you know, I tell people Dad was, he was not totally wrong. We lived on a big hill in the projects overlooking the bay.
Martin was 8 when he, his mom, and 6 siblings moved into the Hunters Point housing project.
It was a very, very beautiful area. I mean, the grounds were kept very nicely and very neatly.
Then the money dried up, the gardener was gone, and it changed.
I'll always remember my friends and I, you know, picking out those of our friends who we thought were the rich ones in the environment. I believe that our perception was those households that had a father in the family who had a car and a job, we felt like they were the wealthy ones.
Was your father not there?
Well, yeah, after Dad got us here from Detroit, unfortunately, but he was gone. We got here in 59, and by 61, he was gone into another life. So Mom spent the rest of that time raising us.
As Martin was growing up, he noticed how much more civically active women were in the neighborhood, fighting to bring dollars to the community to fund programs, several that shaped who he is today. But throughout his life, he continued to ask this one question: where are the men? Then one day, on a school field trip to the phone company, an unexpected role model walked into his life.
And he was African American. He came down and he greeted us all at the door, a group of us kids.
The man was wearing a 3-piece suit.
And he said, "We're about to have an extraordinary experience that you all may not have seen or heard before."
The man took Martin and the group of students to the phone company's central office. Walking into the office, they hear click, 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 click.
And he was able to explain to us what the clicks were all about. He said, "Every time you hear one of these hundreds of clicks and thousands of clicks you're hearing, that means someone somewhere is taking the phone off the hook." And it was just amazing to us. And he spoke so clearly, made us understand the depth of that technology at the time. I said 2 things to myself. I said, "I got to get me one of those suits," number one. And number two, I said, "This is the job I want to do."
Martin got the suit and the job. He started off at the telephone company right out of high school. While there, he became the head of urban affairs. His job was to help the company address issues in mostly minority communities. Martin became the main liaison to the NAACP. One day, his home phone rang, and it was NAACP's then executive director, Dr. Benjamin Hooks, with an offer.
The regional director of the Western region of the NAACP, the same job that gentleman in my high school had been in.
Martin says the next few years were sobering, dealing with a series of letter bombs, death threats, racial violence, white supremacists, police shootings. Then he received a letter from members of infamous Los Angeles gangs, the Crips and the Bloods, claiming inhumane conditions in the L.A. County Jail.
And they said, in essence, help us, NAACP. It's not that we don't belong in jail. We have done things that cause us to need to be in jail because we've broken the law. But what's going on inside here is not supposed to be happening to us or any human beings.
Martin's life was about to change again with the team he visited the jail.
And I went and I walked into that jail, and I could barely keep from crying myself. I remember then biting my tongue. And as far as I could see on all three tiers, there was a young black man. They got hope just seeing us there.
Martin says inmates reported horrendous conditions, including allegations of torture. While working to improve conditions for these men, Martin realized that they weren't the only ones being affected by their incarceration. These men left voids behind in their communities.
Right now, I can show you all kinds of documentation that talk about, you know, the implication of what happens in communities when the fathers are missing.
He saw a similar problem when he looked around his own neighborhood. Out of this came the Men and Fatherhood Service Program. James Martin started it on his own, but soon the local YMCA got interested and helped him with some funding. Martin says they try to help men manage their emotions, learn how to address relationship issues, and how to be a supportive parent. In the last 4 years, over 100 men have gone through the group. Aladdin Fagan relied on the group when his son was taken from his ex's custody 2 years ago.
During that process, I was made to do anger management classes, fatherhood classes, parenting classes. And a lot of times when things didn't go my way, I would have to bring myself into class, holding my heart in my hands.
After running the groups at the Bayview YMCA since 2009, Martin is retiring, but he's left a signature mark.
All right, okay, all right. 1, 2, 3!
That's the man sound. Tonight, a room full of current and past participants, colleagues, and friends come together to say goodbye to Martin at his retirement party in the best way they know how.
So are you ready to do it again? Make sure with the neighborhood knows we're here? Yeah. You ready? Yeah. All right, we're going to do this. 1, 2, 3! See, you see, that's why we make a man sound, because we need to know people. We need people to know that we are here and that we're not going anywhere. And if we haven't been there, then we're going to get back to where we need to be.
Aladdin Fagan didn't just learn the man sound from Martin. He says Martin taught him how to be a man.
Because that's one thing a lot of us men never learned growing up, was how to be a man.
That was the same for Martin until he met the man in the three-piece suit. Now he's trying to be even more than a man in a suit to the men in his community. Though he's retiring from the Y, it's not quite the end. He plans to support building the infrastructure of the fatherhood program so it can continue without him and be replicated in other areas. And in the meantime, you might find him speaking at a rally, singing, or performing spoken word about love and brotherhood.
When you love a brother back, you love his family. You love your community. You love the little children that we all love to see. When you love a brother back, it's about us. It's about what we do. It's about who we are.
In Bayview, I'm Laura Flynn for Cross Currents.
Love a brother back. I love you, my brothers. Love me back.
That story was produced for the Sights and Sounds of Bayview Project, a collaboration between KALW and the San Francisco Arts Commission to tell the stories of people making a positive impact on San Francisco's Bayview neighborhood. It featured music by Third Street Productions, part of the Third Street Youth Clinic in Bayview. You can hear more stories about Bayview on our website, kalw.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And we stay in the Bayview neighborhood for this week's audiograph. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound.
Good play, bro.
You won't win.
He counted 15 already. 5. 20 to nothing. But now, don't worry about it.
We asked you to tell us what it was and where we recorded it. KALW's Leela Day brings us the answer.
Can you just tell me where we are right now?
Where we are? Well, 3rd and Palouf. The happening spot, Bayview Hunters Point. This is it.
Mendel Plaza is right in the middle of the Bayview neighborhood. It's commonly known as 3rd and Palouf, which is the Muni stop here. It's open, no shade anywhere, except for under the bus stop awning where people are peeking at 3 men playing dominoes at a portable table.
I might can't see, but I'm playing. Trust and believe. You won't win.
Along the west side of the plaza is the raised platform for the T-Line, the newest Muni train that runs from downtown through Bayview and onto Sunnydale. People look down into the hustle of the plaza. It's like having balcony seats at a theater with the perfect view.
All right, court's now in session.
At the corner of the plaza, a man with dreadlocks talks to a police officer about the best place to make photocopies. A group of girls gather in the center of the plaza, complimenting each other's stilettos. If you cut across the plaza, past the palm trees and the mural of a young black girl holding a pumpkin, another group of people are holding hands, praying. There are only 2 places that aren't shelters in San Francisco that offer the homeless a place to sleep at night. And they're both in the Bayview neighborhood. One is a walk-in center a few blocks away, called Mother Brown's. The other is here at the Providence Baptist Church, where volunteer Louise Johnson is handing out food.
I know it's already fast, huh?
Johnson has lived here since the 1950s, long before the T-Line came through Bayview. Back then, something else took over the streets around Mendel Plaza.
Mendel was a slaughterhouse. All down there, where Walgreens is, all that was a slaughterhouse. And the cows would be there, and it would be so creepy. And because you could hear them just going, oh, you couldn't see them, they would be going, mm-mm. There's a many of days, the cows would, they would be walking them down Evans, and they would get loose. And I remember that well, and the man would come riding on his horse and rounding them up. And catching them.
It's a corner that's gone through many changes.
Them days, them was good days. Them was, you know, I look at it growing up over here and just roaming the projects, you know, growing up, and there was no killing.
Bayview has the highest crime rate in San Francisco. For many people in the neighborhood, Mendel Plaza was a symbol of that, a place where drugs, muggings, and gang activity was normal. Now, little by little, people are taking the plaza back, hanging out, meeting with friends, playing dominoes. Walking through the plaza, I see a woman with her headphones on. She ignores the many heads that turn, trying to get her attention as she passes. She's not afraid. She walks toward the T-Line platform, and when she reaches the top, takes a seat. The balcony. Looking down at the plaza, it's the perfect place to watch the theater unfold. In Mendel Plaza, I'm Leela Day for Cross Currents.
Well, we got some good guesses on this one and some great ideas for future audiographs, so thank you. Our winner this week is Jim Murray. Congratulations, Jim. We are sending you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, this week's audiograph got us thinking, how have the sounds of your neighborhood changed? Are there things you hear now that you've never heard before? Sounds you miss? Give us a call and tell us all about it. Our number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Maya DePaola Hanica, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Linda Jew, Christina Loring, Julia Scott, Charlotte Silver, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was produced by Ashley Ann Craigbaum and engineered by Seth Samuel. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio. This is the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. You can catch their spring performance called Luster, an American Songbook, next Tuesday and Wednesday at Davies Symphony Hall, starting at 8 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.